Hello and welcome to the Career Changers podcast. I'm Elisa Martinic and I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of the Career Changers. I'm definitely one of them. I learned from my experience that following our dreams requires courage, self-awareness and a lot of inner work. I love to discover stories of career change and share them with the world as a source of inspiration for all those who are still searching. Career changes are not a straightforward chronology written in our CVs, but the sum up of our dreams, ambitions, failures, and successes. The Career Changers is an online community that aims to inspire thousands of people during their journey to self-realization. We discover and share inspirational real-life stories of career change. We inspire people that are thinking to change career. We support people that want or need to change career, but feel stuck or lacking confidence and clarity. We connect and collaborate with organizations that support career change across different industries. I believe that thinking to have only one job or career in our life is a limiting belief, unless the job or that career make us happy. Life is a journey, and with one third of our lives spent working, it would be unimaginable to not have a desire to explore new avenues. Welcome to the Career Changers podcast. Hello and welcome to the Career Changers. Our guest today is Jane Ferre, career coach helping frustrated professionals who have outgrown their current role to secure the role of their dreams. Jane started her career coaching business after experiencing redundancy not once, but twice in 1 year, once a choice, the other not. Before setting up her own coaching practice, she had a 20 plus year career in senior HR roles, such as HR business partner, head of leadership development, and head of talent at British Airways, before joining Leon Restaurants as the very first head of training. For these reasons, Jane understands exactly how much effort you need to put into each job application and how frustrating it can be when you get ghosted after an interview. She's also been on the other side of the recruitment table, so knows exactly what recruiting managers are looking for. Today, Jane is going to talk about her career and how to land your dream job. Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Elisa. It's great to be here.
So let's start with your professional life. How did you start your professional life? Or better, what was your first job?
Well, my very first job was delivering newspapers. So that's something that in the UK you can do age 13, but I was actually 11 because I was doing my brother's paper round at that time because he was off playing ice hockey and lacrosse. And so I thought I'd like that money, the £3 something a week that it was at the time. it felt like big money back then, but, you know, every little helps, as they say. So that was my first job, and I've always really worked. So after that, I did, you know, while I was studying, I was doing, you know, jobs in hotels, waitressing. I couldn't wait till I was 18 and I could work behind a bar because you don't have to walk as far when you work behind a bar. So that was that was a great job. So that's my service and things. So that's where that comes from. Yeah.
I think you froze.
So I moved into. I think I did. Yeah. I wasn't quite sure who it was. Just before we came on, I said I've been having terrible laptop troubles today. Okay. It seems to be on a huge ghost low. So let's fingers crossed.
I was scared to lose you.
I'm here. I'm still here.
So what was your dream job when you were a child, if you had one?
Do you know, I always wanted to have my own radio show. Oh, and I think now it's really funny because it's like, now it's like, well, why don't you just start a podcast? But I love being guests on people's podcasts. It's not something that I've got around to doing. So it's great to be here today on your podcast. So I think that radio thing is quite nice because I just like talking with people. I really like getting, you know, figuring out what's going on for people. So, yeah.
And what is your educational background?
So it's the subject I did at university was hospitality. So it was kind of moving again. It was just a kind of financial thing. I can go and be a waitress. I can work in a hotel. I went to the sort of school that didn't like people leaving at age 18. They wanted everybody to go to university. And so it was a question of what university you're going to. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So at the time, there was a polytechnic, so they don't exist anymore. So I was already the black sheep because, you know, nobody from this school goes to a polytechnic. But I just really wanted to do more with the hospitality thing. So that's what I studied at university. And that helped me to get what I call my first kind of adult job at Disneyland Paris. So Disneyland Paris opened in the year that I left uni. So, and they're having their 30th anniversary this year. So that's how long ago it was. It was since I left uni. But that I joined their graduate program because there's a whole, yes, you've got the theme park with the castle and all the rides. You've also got a huge resort with the hotels that's just next to the park. So I went over there at age 21 to Paris, speaking a little bit of French, but not that much. That's where I started my career in earnest.
So how and when did you start thinking about becoming a coach?
Well, when I was working at British Airways, I was one of the roles that I did for quite a long time was HR business partner. Now, this role is because BA is such a big company, so at the time there was about 40,000 people working there. The HR business partner is almost like an HR director of their division. So I was spending a lot of time with the senior leadership team of the different areas I was allocated to. So I spent some time at Gatwick, I spent some time at engineering, I spent some time in the kind of comms communications team and cabin crew management. And you become like the confidant of the senior leader because they need to discuss their plans with someone, but they can't discuss it with their team because their plans invariably involve their team and invariably involve losing members of their team. So I almost took that role on by default. And I loved being that confidant, mentor, and coaching the senior leader. I also had team members as well that I coached. So people used to love to come and work with me because they knew I'd push them hard, but that would give them the foundation to go and get a promotion after working with me. And the opportunity came up within British Airways to get a quick coaching qualification, because what they were trying to do was build a team of what they call internal coaches. So I mean, it's the cost saving measure. Let's be clear. It's a way to save money. So let's not spend money on expensive coaches, but let's get a pool of people ourselves within the airline that we can use to coach people. So I became one of those coaches and did my coaching qualification that way. I was actually coaching anyway, but what this gave me was the certificate, you know, the stamp, if you like, because I think I knew back then that I was going to be leaving the airline. And actually, as much as I loved doing it, I knew that I was going to leave. And actually, here was something else that I could put in my toolkit that I could use at a different point in time. And then when I, you know, I thought about it when I left British Airways, that was my first redundancy. And then I actually got headhunted for Lyon. So I went, it was almost too good a job for me to pass up because it's back to hospitality. I love their ethos around food. But that role became redundant 8 months later. And then I thought, actually, this is a sign that I can kind of take this coaching and do something with it. And that's what I've been doing since then. And yeah, I love it.
So what challenges did you have to overcome to transition career, if any?
I think when I was at British Airways, I think because it's such a big organization, you can move quite seamlessly from one role to another. And because you are known within the organization, people will take a chance on you. Even if you might not have the exact skills to do the job at that time, because they know you and they can see what sort of attitude and approach you've got to work, and actually that you'll figure it out if you don't know it, then people will take a chance. So that was great. I think the biggest learning curve for me has been since leaving the corporate world, leaving that secure, as much as it can be secure, environment of being in sort of paid, being an employee in the paid work. And one of the things that I talk to people about who are going through redundancy, I work with a lot of people at that stage, is, you know, since I've left paid work, my learning curve has almost been vertical, because I've just had to like figure it all out kind of on the fly. So that's been the real challenge for me is, you know, I was in HR for a good 15 years. I was in the corporate world for, you know, just over 20 years. There's so much that you can do. I think the challenge with that is figuring out what is your specialism. And actually I figured out through trial and error that my specialism is helping people in their career. So even I'm even kind of going more niche now and saying actually it's about helping people to find their dream job, yes, but it's helping HR directors to exit their senior people from their business with speed, dignity, and grace, because that is happening a lot right now. People are having to exit people from their business and they need to do it quickly so that the people who are staying can move on and the people who are leaving can leave with their head held high.
So today, through your work, how do you support people in their careers?
So I think what something like redundancy does is it gives you the opportunity to hit the pause button and just to take a step back and just figure out that, I mean, the thing that happened to me was I sort of thought, how the hell did I end up here? It's almost like, and again, when you work for a big organization, you transition from one role to another quite quickly. And then suddenly you go, oh, I'm here. I'm not quite sure how this happened, but actually, let's go back to the start. So what I help my clients to do is to just really think about what's really important to you right now. So in terms of your own personal values, what's really important? And then use that as the basis for a job search, because that will help you to figure out what types of organizations that you want to work with, work for. So, you know, when I left British Airways, I knew that I wanted to go back into hospitality. I liked ethical businesses. There were some types of businesses that I knew I didn't want to work for. You know, I didn't want to work for betting companies, for example, or tobacco firms or payday loan companies. But I did want to go back into hospitality. I did want to work for a fast moving kind of business, not one that was very slow moving and traditional and hierarchical. And that helped me in terms of finding my job search. So when Leon came along, it was almost this perfect match. So I help people to kind of almost hit the pause button, take three steps back and just survey like the landscape, take a look at like what is going on and actually what do they want to do at this point? Because it can be a real opportunity to reinvent yourself and just, or to get back on the right track that you were on, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago that you'd somehow come off. So that's what I help my people to do, just really make that transition back so that the move that they make is one that's really good for them.
You have this very interesting background. You've been working on the side of on the HR side, so you know all the secrets and what people are looking for. And then now you're on the other side where you're helping people find their dream jobs or changing their careers or finding more meaningful careers. So what are the steps to follow to land our dream jobs? I guess, I mean, with the career changes and especially now, even after the pandemic, with everything that's been happening, many people are transitioning, changing. And sometimes I have
I don't think it's just a perception. I think it's a reality that companies are not really open yet to career changers. So what is your feedback about this idea?
I think that companies are. I think where people struggle is they're focused much more on them. Whereas if you're in the market, if you're in the market for a new job, you need to look at yourself through the eyes of a potential employer. So you need to think about how are you positioning yourself in the market and how are you positioning yourself as valuable to that hiring manager or that organization? Because actually what they're looking for is they're looking for you to tell them how you are going to do one of three things. And that's either make them more money, so increase sales in some way, reduce the cost base that they have, or mitigate any risk that they might have. So it's your job, particularly as a career changer, to highlight what skills are transferable. So the things, the stuff that you've done in the past, how can that transfer to what you are doing right now? So if I think about, you know, if there are, you know, if we were to put a HR, you know, word on it, a competency, which I hate because it almost seems like I'm just competent at this thing. But it's, you know, things like project management. If you can manage a project, you can manage a project. You can manage a project. That skill is a great skill. If you manage a team, you can manage a team. You can manage a team. You can manage a team. Communication skills are another, great transferable skill. But it's your job as the candidate to help the hiring manager understand why your skills would be a great addition to their team. So that's where some of that foundation work that I do with my clients is useful, because we kind of go back through some of the things that they have done in the past, you know, and I work with them to articulate what they did, but moreover, what the result of that piece of work was. The killer question is, can you link that achievement back to one of those three things: making money, saving money, mitigating risk? And if you can do that, then I think that you're halfway there, because it's not so much about I'm the career change person. It's about here's what I can do for you and your business. And that's really powerful. And the fact that you're not from that world, again, is really powerful in that sense.
So how would you guide someone to decide which are the next step in their career? Someone may just want to progress their career. Someone may feel unfulfilled and not have clarity on what to do next. Someone may know that they always wanted to try something different but don't have the courage to do it. So what would be your approach?
So I think that's where the first thing I do with my clients is we look at values. So we go back to what are their values, what's really important to them. And, you know, through that conversation, so that's an exercise that I give them. Through that conversation, we kind of figure out this. So I just ask them those questions around actually, you know, where are you? Where do you want to be? And what happens is a lot of people are on that kind of in that place where they feel that they should be doing a certain thing, they feel that they should be at a certain level, and very often, you know, they're quite happy where they are. They don't want to be it's about knowing what you're good at as well. They don't necessarily want to be at the next level, because actually I'm here operating in my zone of genius, and I don't, you know, if I step up to the next level, that involves, I don't know, longer days. The amount of conversations that I've had with people who've said, I don't want my boss's job because I've seen how stressed my boss is. And I just don't want, I'm really happy at the level that I'm at. It's just maybe it's the organization that's not quite right for them. Or maybe what they want to do is enrich their, like give breadth to their role, but they just don't have the opportunity to do that where they are. It could just be, actually, they want to carry on doing it, but the organization is the wrong organization for them. So it's that first step, really, that values exercise that I send my clients ahead of our first meeting is the basis for that conversation. And I do what I call a deep dive session. So our first session is 90 minutes. And that that document almost just provides the foundation for the conversation. And then it's figuring out, okay, so where next then? What is your next step? Because people know deep down, they really know the answer. I just provide the, you know, the great thing about coaches of any description is you provide space to people. And what you do is you ask them the questions, you hold up the mirror, you play back things that they've said that they don't even know that they've said, but you're there as this mirror bouncing things back. And that's where the magic happens. You know, the magic happens there. And then I always say with coaching, the magic happens outside the room. So it's outside that session where people just kind of assimilate everything that they've learned or that everything that's happened. And the next session they come back and they're either very clear about, yes, that was the route, or do you know what? I've been really thinking. And I think what I want to do is something completely different. And that's, you know, I'm just giving people space to have those thoughts and, you know, have those conversations.
So after we have clarity, we need to take action. And there are different steps that we can take. One is using a very powerful tool that is LinkedIn. So mm-hmm. how can we leverage our LinkedIn profile so that we can get noticed by the right people?
So the thing is really then is to be clear. So that's why that foundation work is so important. So it's to be clear about what do you want to get found for? So get really clear on the types of role that you're looking for, the types of person who's going to be your manager. So in some instances, so let's say when I was at British Airways, because the organization's so big as an HR business partner, I wasn't reporting into the HR director. The HR director was like a level above, like one level above me. Whereas when at Leon, I was reporting into the HR director. So figure out who it is that you're talking to. And again, design your profile around that. With the about section, so many people talk about, I am this, I am that. And it's like, no. Talk about, you know, are you an HR director? What is going on for you right now? What is happening for you right now? Have you got a problem with sickness? Have you got a problem with employee engagement? Have you got a problem with retention? And how do you fix that problem? So, you know, you can apply that for anything. If you're a project manager, you know, are you head of transformation at your organization and your projects are over budget and over time? You know, just really think about what's the problem that you solve. And that's, you know, use your LinkedIn profile as your shop window for that. And then also think about, have you got, you know, is everything correct on there? So is all of your work history correct? And what people don't do as well is they don't then leverage LinkedIn. So I just call that's your basics. Getting your profile right is your basics. It's then thinking about how do you demonstrate your skills and expertise. So when was the last time you wrote an article on LinkedIn? So when did you last write an article on LinkedIn that demonstrates your expertise in a certain area? So for me, it could be three things you can do right now to improve employee engagement. 10 tips for introducing hybrid working to your workplace. You know, those things speak about you and your skills when you're not on LinkedIn. So if someone lands on your profile, they can see what you're going to bring to an organization. So there's that bit around, you know, getting your profile looking right, starting to produce content on there that positions you as an expert, and then going and following the right people on there. So particularly around organizations. So that's the way you get to learn a lot about organizations and what they're doing and whether they would have positions available that would suit your expertise. So it's almost this kind of thing on a, you know, a daily or a weekly basis. You know, obviously if it's daily, the more you put into that machine, the more you'll get out of that machine. And the more you feed it, I mean, it is an algorithm, let's get real. The more you feed the machine, the more the better it gets to know you and what you like, and it will present different people to you, and it will present you to different people. So you have to, it can only be as good as the information that you provide it with. So start to, you know, start to leverage it and connect with people as well. Connect with HR directors, if you know, or whomever would be your next boss, connect with them. see what they're up to. But don't be shy. It's not the time to be shy.
I like Feed the Machine. That's going to start. I don't remember that.
It is. Feed it.
So the next step, something that really, really, I hate this, looking at our CVs, if there is something that I don't really like, is looking at my CV. You can have size, format, experience, skills. So how to write a CV that will get you selected for an interview?
So again, you need to write your CV looking at it through the eyes of the person who will hire you. So again, think about what is their problem. What I do with my clients is we produce, or they produce, what I call a master, a database CV, a master copy CV. So it's part of your foundation work. You put all of your achievements on this master copy CV. This can be as long as you like, right? It doesn't matter. What you then do is you would then pull out the most relevant bits for each role. So again, if I use the example of me as an HR business partner, some HR business partner roles are focused on talent strategy. Others are focused on employee relations. Others are focused on more policy work. So I can do all of that. I don't want to do the policy stuff, but I want to do the talent stuff. So I make sure that what I put front and center on my CV, the stuff that I pull through to my CV applying for a particular role, is the stuff around the talent. So it's just about do the hard work up front, create your master copy, your database with everything on it, and then you just pull out the relevant bits for each particular role. And again, think about why is this opportunity here? An opportunity is the pain point. If there's an empty job, it means that that work isn't getting done. If that work isn't getting done, that's a problem for that manager. So how do you fill that gap for them? So again, you need to do a bit of homework to figure out, why is there a vacancy? Has someone moved on? Is it a new role? You know, is it actually they just need more people doing this role? What is it that's going on? And which bit of your skills and experience do you want to put forward that positions you as the best person?
So I've used CV services before, and I mean, they helped me to land some good jobs. But what I feel is that sometimes I used to work in corporate, that CVs, they're not, if I look at my CV on paper, I don't think it shows my personality. So is there a way to make a CV shine and show your personality in there? And how?
I think it depends on the organization, because I was having this conversation the other day, and I just don't know whether, I don't know if people want always personality again. I think that's where the cover letter can come in. So certainly, you know, a cover, and I'd say depending on the organization. So, you know, I worked with someone quite recently who did a video cover letter. So actually they sent their CV to, I've forgotten what the word is. Almost like a speculative CV. Yeah. And what they did is they attached a video of them just talking. So they actually brought their CV to life. I think what with CVs, what people are looking for is just the facts. It's almost like, do you tick my boxes that I can put you through to the next stage? I think the cover letter is a much better way of showing your passion for the role, your enthusiasm for the role or the organization. It's quite funny, actually, because I was helping my sister recently apply for a role internally in her organization. They asked for a cover letter, and she was one of only two people who submitted a cover letter. Yes. People just don't do it nowadays. And that's, you know, she was applying for a role that was looking at data. And I said, you know, that's your place to put your passion there. And we kind of went a bit crazy and said things like, you know, I love a spreadsheet. And that's almost, I think the cover letter is a much better place to do that. And if you're feeling really brave, then send a video cover letter. Mm. It sets you apart. It sets you apart.
So the next challenge would be to prepare for an interview. So what's the best way to prepare ourselves for the interview of hopefully the job of our dreams?
So I would always say, so check out the people who are interviewing you. So again, this is where LinkedIn is great. Don't do it in secret mode. Do it so they can see that you've looked at their profile. Figure out, you know, this, that is great. And it tells you little things. So it might be that actually, oh, you both support Chelsea. They're a Chelsea fan or something like that, where you can actually kind of weave that into a conversation. So check them out on LinkedIn, do your research. I would also advise going through the job profile, and for each requirement on the job profile, make sure you have got an example achievement that you can use, because you will be asked questions on that. Figure out what I call your TMA. So the tell me about yourself question. You will probably be asked this question because it just fills a bit of time. And I always say that when I was interviewing, I would always be rushing to that interview. And our office was so big, it would always take me 10 minutes to get to the recruitment center at the beginning. So I would always ask that question just to take the pressure off me a little bit, but also to try and relax the candidate and just to get them talking. And also to see if there was something that I could pick up on later, that I could, you know, come back to later. So always have something prepared for tell me about yourself that is two or three sentences that just is succinct, that the last bit is of which is why you're interested in the role. And remember, your interview is a two-way street. So it's not just them interviewing you, you are interviewing them. Okay. Have some questions prepared for them. So again, like you'll be asked the TMA, tell me about yourself, you will be asked, do you have any questions for us at the end? And have some questions prepared. So if you're there face to face, don't do what one woman did and pulled out a notebook with some notes she'd obviously made on the train on the way in. Have them printed off on a piece of paper. I'd say get 10 prepared. You're not going to ask all 10. You're not going to have the time. But just choose the top two or three, however long you've got time for. Because that, again, I used to love asking this question when I was in corporate, because it demonstrated to me how much prep that the candidate had done. And also it told me something about them. The types of questions that they asked told me something. For the candidates that went, no, or when am I going to hear? It's just like, that's how you're leaving the interview. It's just so weak. Whereas if you can go in and ask some really strong questions, you know, some good ones are always, you know, what would I need to deliver in my first 90 days? Why did you join this organization? I always love that. Why did you join?
Yeah, I love that question.
It's brilliant.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, it's brilliant. What keeps you here? Yeah. You know, that's another one. What keeps you here?
Yeah.
What's the big, you know, if I was to, depending on your business, you know, and there's an airline, if I was to talk to cabin crew, what would they say about working at British Airways? Boom. That's a great question. So think about some really good questions, because that gives the interviewer an idea of how passionate you are and how much you want the role. And it gives them an idea about how you think about things.
So, well, we've done the interview and we've done so well following your tips. But now we got the one, but two, three job offers.
Of course, they're like buses. They come three at once.
So now we have three job offers, and they are offering different salaries. So how do we negotiate the offer?
So I would always say to anybody, don't put yourself forward unless you know or have an idea about what the salary is, because don't waste your time. Don't waste the interviewer's time. I always say you need to have an idea about salary, but also think about it in a broader sense of a total reward package. So, you know, you will have an idea about what you should be earning. You need to know your market. So what does your market pay for this particular role? There are some types of industries that pay more than others. So financial sector will pay more than airlines, let's say, you know, or hospitality. So hospitality is, you know, quite a low payer in the sense of things. But think about what else is really important to you. So, you know, there might be other things. There might be no wiggle room from the hiring manager, so they may not be able to change the salary at all. So public sector is quite restricted in terms of salary banding. What else is important to you? So maybe it might not be salary, but it might be additional days holiday, for example. It could be, you know, a sign-on bonus. It could be you know, the flexibility to work anywhere at any time and not having to come into the office. So just think about, what is my salary, but actually what's my total reward package? And, you know, you need to have a walk away figure. You shouldn't be going into a job application without having an idea, because it's just a waste of time for everyone.
So once we've landed our dream job, what are the tips to succeed in our first 90 days in this new role?
So I think it's really important to have some conversation. So it's to have a conversation to get really clear about what the expectations are. So particularly in big organizations, it's generally a couple of months from them recruiting into the role to you starting, especially if you had a notice period. What they were recruiting for, their big challenge when they went to market, may not be the challenge right now. So it's having that conversation to just get clear about what's the big thing that you need to deliver in that time. I think there's also some conversations about style. So people don't do this enough. So they don't have the conversations about style with their boss. So, you know, how do you like to be communicated with? Is it email? Is it phone? Is it voicemail? You know, I hate text messages. I will look at them. And I've just, as we're saying this, I remembered I should respond to my friend earlier. I will look at them and then not respond. Call me if you want something urgent. So it's like, just establish what those things are for your boss and also for your team as well. So share with your team how you like to work. So what, you know, do you expect to be told things, you know, before it becomes an emergency, for example? How do you like to be communicated with? I would always say, you know, if you get a yes or a no as a text message, that don't be offended, because that's all you're going to get. So just get really clear on that. And then just, I think it's, so particularly a role like mine, whereas I was HR, I was head of learning, I have a lot of internal stakeholders. So it's taking the time to meet with those stakeholders and to position what you will and what you won't do. So very often when a new person arrives, particularly in somewhere like HR or finance is another one as well, you will get stuff. People have been waiting for your arrival and they are going to dump stuff on your desk. Don't take it. Do not just establish what is going on, because once that stuff is on your desk, it then becomes your problem. So just get really clear about what is within your remit and what isn't. And that's a challenge with internal stakeholders. And then start to think about some early wins as well. So is there anything that you could just do, that you could just get done? So it could just be particularly with your team. You know, when I started at Leon, we had a team of trainers who would go out and open new restaurants. They didn't have a laptop. I mean, it's just like they were using their own laptops, which is like a whole like IT security issue right there. So it's just like, okay, I'm just going to get you all laptops. So just think about what are the things that you can do quite quickly that will just have a positive impact, that will just kind of, you know, just call them quick wins. And just then really establish then what your plan is. So you've got 90 days to kind of prove yourself, but start to think about your longer term strategy and get that signed off and start working towards that as soon as you possibly can.
The Great Resignation is showing us that worldwide people are looking for a more fulfilling way to live, especially in their careers. And I think it's related with finding meaning in what we do every day.
So every company has a mission, but do you think people are recruited based on company's mission, or we are still far away from this? Because here, like the work we do at the Career Changer, is something that probably will come up at some point in the future, is everyone is looking for meaning. And how can we, even when we apply for corporate jobs, match our personal mission with company mission? And would it not be beautiful if a company could hire people that they all have the same mission in life and make it successful?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question, because I'm not sure whether every company would like to think they have a mission. I'm just going back to my corporate day. So at Leon Restaurants, the mission is clear. And the fact I know it like 3 years later, to help everyone eat and live well, right? That's their mission. And that is truly at the heart of everything that they do, all business decisions. If I was to go to British Airways, what is their mission?
To fly to serve. Is it that one?
Well, it's really interesting, isn't it? So it was like, was to fly to serve, and then when I was there, they kind of brought it back, and it's like, well, is that a mission, or is that just a marketing statement? Is what is the mission? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Do people talk about their mission? I mean, I know, you know, in terms of organizations, when I talk about organizational values, you know, one of the questions I want to know is, are they lived or are they laminated? You know, so as an organization, I knew that Leon lived their values. So even though, you know, I left because my role became redundant, the way that I was treated throughout that redundancy was through, you know, they behaved in a way that was commensurate with their values, you know, as did I. At BA, was that the same? I actually really don't know what their values are. So it's a tough one. And again, that's part of your research, isn't it? When you're out in the job market, it's like, if you can't figure out what a company's mission values are, how well do you know if that's a match? But then the challenge is, are they lived or they laminated? Because I did read something about, you know, Lehman Brothers, you know, they had a list of values on their very expensive reception wall, none of which were lived. They were just all laminated. So that's a good question at interview. How do you live your values in this team?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the Career Changers is a community where people are looking to find what makes their life more fulfilling. And each company has a mission. And sometimes we may remember it, sometimes we may know it, sometimes we are totally unaware of that. I think that generally, I believe that the majority of people, and I'm open to any discussion about this, when they apply for jobs, especially nowadays, they probably just click the easy, what is called the easy apply.
Easy
button.
Apply, yeah.
And I guess the majority of the times is, okay, I send my CV, the salary maybe is good enough, and people apply in terms of volumes of application, or maybe they're attracted to a company, I don't know. But I think company too should, you know, highlight more, what are they doing to make the world a better place? And this would change completely the conversation when trying to attract talent.
Yeah, I think it's almost these questions. This is how these questions, these statements, these thoughts should be woven into every stage of the recruitment process. So certainly one of the things that I was weaving into my onboarding process, it's almost like the employee life cycle, right? It's every stage of the employee life cycle, from the moment you're recruiting people to like before that, just like your employee value proposition, to then you're recruiting people, to then you're onboarding people, to then, you know, the time they spend in your business working for you, and then they leave at the other end for whatever reason. it, you know, it's that example I gave about Leon. My role was made redundant. I left through redundancy. So not great. It's the business, not a charity. But I was treated in line with their that mission and those organizational values. I think that's the question. You know, when people are hitting easy apply on LinkedIn, it's such a waste of time. I could talk for hours on this subject. It's a false view of their job, of how they're spending their time. I saw someone on LinkedIn say, oh, it's noon and I've already applied for 10 jobs. And I was like, well, how can you possibly apply for 10 jobs? You've obviously hit like LinkedIn apply, but that means you've got this complete scattergun effect. So you're kidding yourself because you've applied for 10 jobs. But actually, have you really had the time to understand the organization, understand the roles, understand the challenges? I believe that less is more. So actually, do fewer applications, but do them well. But actually, you know, go put yourself forward for roles within your network, because the job market is like an iceberg. You only see the top third of jobs. Everything else is hidden, particularly the more senior that you go in an organization. You know, those roles aren't advertised initially. They go through their network, through, you know, if I was employing someone at a very senior level, we would first put that role out through our network. Some of them we would never advertise. We would go through particular recruiters. So it's an interesting one. Could talk for hours on that one alone.
So many stories of career changers, especially from the corporate world, they say that the moment where they felt a need to shift something, and maybe in some cases to leave the corporate world, was when they felt what they were doing was meaningless. It was sort of a repetitive pattern. So based on the conversation we had, this makes me think that many times in the corporate world, something is missing in terms to remember it, that people are individuals and they need to feel the motivation of what they're doing, why they're waking up in the morning and repeating the task that sometimes can be very, probably sometimes repetitive. So how is important for each individual to find their life purpose to be able to thrive in their professional lives?
I'm kind of at the age, I've ripe old age I'm at already, and I'm not sure if I know my purpose right now. I take my hat off to anybody who does. I think I know when I'm not on course with it, even though I couldn't articulate necessarily what my purpose is. I know that when something is not right, and I think we feel that generally through, I think most of the research will indicate that it's around your relationship with your line manager. So it's that, you know, have you got that connection with your, you know, your line manager? Are they, you know, articulating why you're doing a particular role? Can you see how this, we used to call it a BA, single line of sight. So can you see this direct line from the corporate vision, the strategy, to what you are doing right now? And if you can't, you know, see that direct line of sight, then that just means that sort of takes away that meaning, because there is, you're not linking your activity to whether it's your mission or the corporate mission. If you can't see directly how that links up, then there's a question around why you should be doing that. And I think that's what gives us that sense of like loss of meaning to our role. And that coupled with, you know, the relationship with your line manager. Some line managers are brilliant at this, and others are just not great line managers. They're great technically, but they're just not brilliant people managers. And I think that's, you know, there is that saying that people join a company and leave a manager, and I think that's so true.
So what type of advice would you give to anyone along their path to self-realization?
I think you'll know when you get there. I I think I'm certainly still on my way. I think what I find is that people are afraid to make mistakes. I think what we're conditioned, and certainly now when I see this with young people that I know, we're not encouraged to make mistakes. It's always about how can you always be the top and get an A. And it's like, it's when you make mistakes, it's when you mess up that you do the most learning. And it's that stuff that really helps. So you have to put yourself at risk. You have to put yourself in situations that make you feel uncomfortable, because that will tell you whether it's the right thing or not anyway. But that's also where if you fail, and again, I hate that word, but if you don't succeed, let's flip that. If you don't succeed at something, that's when your learning takes place. But also what it will do is it will just nudge you in a different direction, and that's okay. And it's almost like, I'm not quite sure, do we ever know we get there? I don't know. But it's almost like the journey there is fun, right?
In fact, I said along the path.
I like that, along the path, yeah. Because if, like, what, do I become like the Buddha or something when I get there? I don't know. I'm like Zen.
And what advice would you give, we go a little bit more down to heart now, to someone looking to change their career?
I would just ask yourself why. You know, why is it you're looking to change your career? What do you think that changing your career will help you do? It's almost like, a lot of the time when I deal with people who are asking that question, it's almost like, what's the void that you think changing your career will do? Sometimes there is like a huge thing. Sometimes it's necessity. Their role, what they do, just doesn't exist in the world anymore or is becoming obsolete. But there's almost something else behind that question, I think. It's almost like, what is, you know, are you just bored? And it could be like, are you just bored with what you're doing? Are you just, you know, were you doing that just to, because I don't know, you have kids and you just wanted to do something that would get you at school for pickup? But just really ask the question, like, why are you looking to change? What's the real reason? And where are you looking to get to? What do you want to be different as a result of this career change?
So if anyone, before we go to the last question, if anyone would like to get in touch with you, where and how can they find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn, or head on over to my website, which is just my name, janeferre.com.
So the last question that we ask to every guest on our podcast, if you could give yourself a piece of advice, what would you say to your younger self?
Gosh, what would I say to my younger self? I'd say everything will be fine. Don't worry about it. Everything will be fine. And say yes.
Yes, woman.
Yeah, say yes.
Thank you, Jane, for joining us today and sharing your inspirational career change story and wisdom with the career changers.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Elisa. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you. And a last message for our listeners. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel and tune in next week for a new inspirational episode of The Career Changers. Thank you.